We're continuing our study in the 35th Psalm. This is our third lesson in the 35th Psalm. And in this Psalm, David is appealing to God to give him relief from his enemies. Those persons that had formerly been his friends, those persons that he had done good to, that he had done no wrong to, and they had no cause to hate him, they now had turned against him. They were saying slanderous things against him. They were bearing false witness against him. They were persecuting him in many ways. And so David is praying to God that he would give him deliverance from this tragic situation. In the first 10 verses, he gives a simple prayer to God that he would have deliverance. Then in the next portion of the chapter, verses 11 through 16, he describes the character and the conduct of his enemies. Then beginning with verse 17, he says, "Lord, how long wilt thou look on?" How long are you going to let this thing happen, God, and just look on as though you were passively not going to become involved and not going to give me rescue? How long will thou look on? Rescue my soul from their destruction, my darling from the lions. I will give thee thanks in the great congregation. I will praise thee among much people. So David's going to be thankful to God when he does have this rescue. Then he says in verse 19, "Let them not that are mine enemies wrongfully rejoice over me, neither let them wink with the eye that hate me without a cause." Asking God simply to stop them in their bad conduct. Not let this thing happen that is now happening. And then in verse 20, and this is where our lesson begins at this time, "For they speak not peace, but they devise deceitful matters against them that are quiet in the land." Here David is describing some of the characteristics of those that are wicked, those that are now his enemies. They speak not peace. That is, they desire to quarrel. They want to not leave well enough alone, but they want to cause some kind of friction, some kind of misunderstanding, some kind of an opposition that brings about a disturbance of the peace. They seek not peace. And we see this is one of the natures of mankind. Although man needs peace so badly, peace is one of our most desperate needs, yet man continually does things that seeks not peace. He continues to do things that rocks the boat. They seek not peace, but they devise deceitful matters. Now, to devise deceitful matters means that they make things that are not really the facts. It's not really a true representation of the way things are, but they make things up so that they can bring about a disruption of the peace, so that they can cause some kind of a quarrel to go on. As we look at man's behavior in general, whether it be the disturbance of peace between nations or between families or between individuals, there usually is some kind of a deceitful matter, that is something that's been devised that's not the truth, something that's been made up or blown out of proportion, something that's been misrepresented that's not the way it actually is. There's usually something like that at the bottom of the whole disturbance in the beginning. It's because there are some who just want to not have peace. They want to have some kind of a conflict. They want to have some kind of a confrontation. And so they blow up the least little thing, the thing that really is maybe not even the truth at all, and they use that as a reason then to cause the conflict or the disturbance. So they devise deceitful matters against them that are quiet in the land. Now those that are quiet in the land are those that are meek and humble and not making the noise to disrupt the peace. They're the ones that are wanting to follow along with peaceful things. And so those that do not want peace, they devise these deceitful matters. They make up things that are really not the truth, and they blow them out of proportion, and they use them as a cause or a reason to go against them that are quiet in the land. They actually make some kind of an attack on those that are peaceful. It may not be true out-and-out violence, but it can be some kind of a verbal attack. It can be some kind of a slanderous thing, or it can be a challenge in some way. But at any rate, they are doing something to disrupt the peace. And so they speak not peace. That's not their nature. That's not their desire at all. He further says in verse 21, "Yea, they opened their mouth wide against me and said, Ah, ah, our eye has seen it." So although this matter they brought up against them to disrupt the peace was a deceitful matter, they maintain that it's the truth. They open their mouth wide against me. That is, they make long and loud proclamations of this. They're not silent about it at all. They're making a big big to-do here. And they say, "Ah, ah, our eye has seen it." This phrase, means it's something like, yes, we've caught you in the act. We're very sure about this. It's kind of like clucking the tongue and shaming someone for having done something they shouldn't have done. Our eye has seen it. They maintain we're witnesses to this. We have seen it. We know that it's happened. We know this is the way you are. And so they maintain then that the things that they're doing to disrupt the peace are justified because they're so sure that they've caught you doing something that's wrong. Now, this is the nature of man. Man, for some reason or other, when he's outside of the realm of God, when he's not truly a God-fearing person, seems to want to destroy himself. And he does this by destroying that thing that he needs so badly, that is the peace. He wants to continually be at odds with somebody, have some kind of a stir going, some kind of friction, some kind of a debate, some kind of a quarrel. And if he has to, then he'll devise deceitful matters to let it happen. And we need to look into our lives and to be sure then that we're not living this kind of a life, that we're not allowing ourselves to follow this kind of a pattern, because if we are, we're only bringing about a misery upon ourselves and misery upon those round about us, because we are destroying the thing that man needs so badly, and that is the peace. We need to be among those that are quiet in the land, among those that are diligently striving to mind our own business and not to interfere with others, especially to the point of causing some kind of a disruption of peace and harmony. Verse 21, he says, "This thou hast seen, O Lord, keep not silence. O Lord, be not far from me." Here David is presenting the truth of the matter. Just as they've claimed to have seen me, just as they've claimed to see me do something that's not the truth, you have seen them, O Lord. You've seen their actions. You've seen their behavior. You've seen the methods that they use, which are certainly improper methods. You've observed all this. You know their conduct. You know my conduct. So I beg of thee, keep not silence. Make yourself known. Give some kind of a rebuke. Just as it said back in verse 17, "Lord, how long wilt thou look on? Rescue my soul from their destruction, my darling from the lions." Here he's asking God to keep not silence. Take some kind of action. Intervene. Make your presence known. Make your power known. He's so sure that God is going to be for him and in his favor because he's in the right. He wants God to take some action. He's urging God to do something. He says, "O Lord, be not far from me. I'm in a terrible state. I have a strong opposition here. I need your help. So be not far from me. Be close to me so you can give me the assistance. Give me the help that I need to have." Verse 23 says, "Stir up thyself and awake to my judgment, even unto my cause, my God and my Lord." Here he's asking God to arouse himself. Stir up thyself. Come to action on my behalf. Awake to my judgment. That is, pronounce judgment in my case. Put me before the great bar and see if my case is a justifiable one. See what my true position is in the eyes of justice. Even unto my cause, my God and my Lord. That is, take notice of my cause. Take notice of my need here. I'm in the right. I feel that I'm in the right, and I want you to notice that I'm in the right and to stand for me. Further in verse 24, he says, "Judge me, O Lord my God, according to thy righteousness." Now he's asking for judgment, that God would judge between him and his foes, between those and those that are his enemies. Pass some kind of judgment here. Pass some kind of a decision. Make some kind of an acknowledgement of which one of us is right, which one of us is wrong. So judge me according to thy righteousness. Put me to the great standard that is known as thy righteousness. This is the yardstick by which all men are going to be judged eventually, by the standard of whatever God's righteousness is. And so that's what he's asking for here. Judge me according to thy righteousness, and let them not rejoice over me. Pass this judgment so that they then are going to be in a state of condemnation, which is the true result of their way of life. Let them realize that they are going to be condemned, that they are wrong, and that I am right. We have to certainly have a strong feeling that we are in the right. We have to have a clear conscience. We have to have certainly put our effort into doing those things that we believe in order to ask God to pass this kind of a judgment on us, to judge me according to thy righteousness, and let them not rejoice over me. Anytime we can ask God to do this with all good faith and all clear conscience, then we truly have done all that we know to do to serve him. Verse 25 says, let them not say in their hearts, ah, so would we have it. Let them not say, we have swallowed him up. In other words, he's asking that they not be given the victory over him, that they not be able to say in their hearts, ah, this is exactly the way we thought it was. Here we've pronounced him to be guilty of these sins, and he certainly is. We've said these bad things about him, and they're true. He's lived up to the name that we've given him. David says, let them not say in their hearts, ah, so would we have it. Let them not be able to get away with this slander, with this foul and evil disposition that they've had against me. Let them realize that they are in the wrong, and that I am justified, that I am someone who has been mistreated, and that they've wronged me. So let them not say in their hearts, ah, so would we have it. Let them not say we've swallowed him up. To swallow him up means that they have consumed him. They have, by their charges against him, they've made these charges stick. They have made their evil intentions come into a reality. And so he then has been completely defeated. He's been swallowed up. But he says, let them not say that we've done this. And the way that God would let them not say it is for God to show them that they are wrong. For God to show them that they're following the way that's going to lead to their destruction. And so the very things that they wish to happen to David are really in turn going to happen to them. He follows this very same line of thought now in verse 26. Let them be ashamed and brought to confusion together that rejoice at mine hurt. Now to be ashamed and brought to confusion means that they do not have a feeling of gratification or pride or any kind of satisfaction at the fact that they rejoiced at his hurt. You know, that's the thing that these enemies are wanting to get out of this. They're wanting to make themselves look good and feel good at David's expense. And so the lower they could bring David, the more they could bring ridicule and disgrace upon him, then the better they would feel at it. And this is just one of those things that man has built into his human nature, to want to build himself up at the expense of someone else. And this is one of the feelings that envy comes from. We feel bad when someone else has something good happen to them, and so then we will feel good if they have something bad happen to them. And so David is just simply asking God to not let this happen. Let them be ashamed and brought to confusion. That is, let them feel that they really are in the wrong. Let them have some kind of a prick of their conscience. Let them have a feeling of not being satisfied, not being given this good, secure feeling at what they're doing to me. But they need to be ashamed for what they're doing. They need to be brought to confusion. That is, say we're not able to understand why this didn't work out the way we want it to work out. Let them be brought to confusion together that rejoice at mine hurt. We should never rejoice that someone else is hurt. It's not our place to do this. It's not our place to rejoice that someone else is hurt. We're not to get revenge. This is God's job to get revenge. And if we get joy at someone else's hurt, then we may very likely find ourselves in the position of having someone else to rejoice at our hurt. And the thought is, those who do this should be ashamed. They should be brought to confusion. He further says in verse 26, let them be clothed with shame and dishonor that magnify themselves against me. Now, of course, to be clothed with shame is the same thought as being ashamed. They're going to have a feeling that they're in the wrong. Anytime we have a sense of shame, we realize that we're in the wrong. Our conscience is telling us that we're not doing the right thing. We're not doing the proper thing. And so that's what David asked that God have happened to them, that they have a feeling of having done wrong, that they be aware of having lost their honor by treating him in such a way as this, by magnifying themselves against him. And this is one of the attributes that a Christian is to have this ability to feel shame. In Ephesians, the 4th chapter, the Apostle Paul warns there that we not walk in the way of the Gentiles, the way that the other Gentiles walk. And one of the characteristics of their walk was that they were beyond feeling. They could not feel shame. We also read in the New Testament about those who have their conscience seared with a hot iron. And this is still talking about the fact that they're not able to feel shame. We need to be able to feel shame when we've done something that's wrong. When we've done something that's improper, we need to be able to feel that this is not the right way to walk. I have not done the proper thing. I have dishonored myself. I have lost my feeling or my position or my ability to feel good about what I've done. I no longer am satisfied with this activity that I'm doing. There's something bad wrong with it. And so when we can get that feeling, then we're well on our way to being able to repent, being able to make some correction, being able to turn the thing around. But as long as we feel no shame, as long as we feel no dishonor, as long as we can feel good about what we're doing, then that we have lost that incentive to make a change. We've lost the incentive to truly then follow the living God. So we can see what an appropriate prayer this is for us to make to God when we're talking about our enemies, about those that oppose us, about those that would magnify themselves against us. May they be ashamed of what they're doing. May they feel this sense of dishonor. May they be clothed with shame. And then when they can feel that way, they're going to change their actions. They're going to be pained at their activities against me. They're going to not receive this gratification, this sense of satisfaction that they want to get out of this. And this then will be the biggest incentive to bring about a change in their lives. And yet he contrasts this in verse 27 by saying, "Let them shout for joy and be glad that favor my righteous cause. Yea, let them say continually, let the Lord be magnified, which hath pleasure in the prosperity of his servant." Here David is talking about those that recognize him as being a righteous man. This is a contrast to those that were magnifying themselves against him, those that were trying to run him down, those that were saying the bad things about him. These people recognize David what he truly is. He says, "Let them shout for joy and be glad that favor my righteous cause." They should then be made to realize that they are doing the right thing by favoring someone who's righteous. They shouldn't be ashamed of their actions. Never should we be ashamed or be confounded or made confused because we're supporting what's right. Let's be well pleased with what we're doing when we support the right thing. Let us have that feeling of satisfaction, that feeling of gratification that we have truly done the proper thing when we're supporting what's right. So those that favor my righteous cause, let them shout for joy. Let them be glad. Let them not be made to feel badly at all for doing this. He says, "Yea, let them say continually, let the Lord be magnified, which hath pleasure in the prosperity of his servant." Let them see, then, that the Lord is satisfied with my life. Let them see that you are blessing me in the fact that I'm your servant and you're going to give me prosperity in this condition. And then may they realize that you're the one that's doing this. You're the one that's responsible for my prosperity. You're the one that's responsible for my good position in this life. And then rather than to honor me, let the Lord be magnified. When they see what you've done for me, then may they magnify the Lord. Magnify thee, O God. So this results then in God being magnified, not in man being built up. When God gives us prosperity, we shouldn't say, "Well, look what great thing I've done. Look how great I am. Look what a wondrous accomplishment I've made." No, the Lord should be magnified. Amen. And when we see others that have been blessed and made to be prosperous by the Lord, here again we should magnify the Lord. Not magnify them, but the Lord, because he's the one responsible for it. Then verse 28, the last verse of the psalm says, "And my tongue shall speak of all thy righteousness and of thy praise all the day long." When this is brought about, whenever those that are my enemies are made ashamed and confounded and confused, that when they wear the garment of shame for what they're doing against me, and those that are my friends, whenever they are allowed to shout for joy and to praise thee, O Lord, for the good thing you've done for me, when that happens, then here's going to be my response. My tongue shall speak of thy righteousness. I'm going to use my power, my tongue, my ability to tell about how great you are, how good you are, about the great characteristics of this true and living God. I'm going to be speaking about you. I'll speak of thy righteousness and of thy praise. I'm going to be praising thee. I'm going to be declaring honor and glory and majesty to thy name. And he said, I'm going to be doing it all the day long. This is going to be one of my major activities, is to tell how great you are and to give praise to you. I'm going to do it all the day long because you're the one then that's brought about my good position. You're the one that's brought about my salvation. You're the one that's put me in this position of safety and security. You're the one that has protected me from the onslaughts of my enemies. This certainly should be the attitude of each one of us who are the followers of God. The things that God has done for us are so great, are so numerous, we cannot count them. We can't think of all of them. We've forgotten many of the good things God's done for us. But let us not forget to speak of his righteousness. Let us not to give him praise all the day long. Let this be one of the constant activities that we carry out here in return for the great things that God has done for us. So we bring this 35th Psalm to a close. Till next time, this is In Secret Saying, goodbye, friends.